Madison, Wisconsin is as good as it gets if you are like me and you love the college sports.
This is The Jump Around with Jim Rutledge and Riley Auk. Streaming live on the ESPN Madison YouTube channel and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Dancing down the sidelines. Can they catch him? No! The Badgers answer instantly. There will be no undefeated champion on Wisconsin with an unbelievable stretch drive to the championship game.
It's over. The Wisconsin Badgers win 17-9. They are the first Big Ten team ever to win successive Rose Bowl games.
That is the best college sports town in America.
Welcome into the Jump Around, a Badger-dedicated show here on the ESPN Madison and the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube streams. I'm Jim Rutledge alongside Riley Yelp. We got Primetime Wollersheim behind the glass today.
Oh, yeah. Throwback to the 90s. I feel old.
And you are in Badger gear, too.
Of course,
so you are ready to go. Riley got the Badger hat on. And somewhere in my big blue truck from Cinnamon Chevy in Mount Horeb is my Badger pin. It must have fallen off. In the truck.
Oh, you typically wear like a Bucky Badger pin
on
the
for this
suit
specific
coat?
Suit coat.
Okay.
But it's nice because it's a magnetic one.
Oh.
But also, so it doesn't put a hole in your jacket, though these come with a little spot for them. But at the same time, not as sturdy.
Okay.
So I think they got bumped with the seatbelt, and it's probably somewhere at the bottom. Because I was driving, I heard like a thump, 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 and I'm like, what was that?
And then you look,
and then
and
like
your
over
Bucky
time,
pin's
I was like,
gone.
I kind of just ran through the mental checklist, and I'm like, it's the Bucky pin.
Yep.
And I forgot to put it on.
That's why the suit coats got the. That's why they got the slot.
Exactly.
So you can put
exactly.
The actual
so,
pin, and it doesn't fall out.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't need to mess with perfection here.
Real.
Speaking of perfection, let's talk about not Badger football.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Indiana football. Now, it is ranking season right now, Riley. It is the time of year where everyone's going to kind of just talk about where teams fit in. And we have two different power rankings we're going to work through together. And newsflash, the Badgers are at the bottom for both of these. But one from ESPN ranks their offseason. And then one from Fox College Football is post-spring Big Ten power ranking. So this is more on the actual team as is. And we're going to see how those match up. And there's no surprise, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on the other teams unless one of them really upsets me that they're up there. Indiana's kind of one of them because, again, I don't think it's impossible for Wisconsin to be in the shadow of Indiana. Right now, they're not in the same, like, essentially conference as Indiana. But as far as smart recruiting, smart spending of money, matching the skills of your recruits to your football players.
Indiana's done it so literally so perfectly, though.
Yeah.
Like, if we're upset that we're not in the shadow of Indiana, imagine how upset Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, etc., how those are.
Exactly. But how for Wisconsin Indiana has become aspirational is a little beyond me. But yes,
sad.
I guess if you want to look at it like that, there are other teams there. Speaking of, the Oregon Ducks are number two on this list. I believe they're number two in the Fox – or number three in the Fox power rankings.
Yeah, I thought we were – I guess it does make more sense given that the Badgers are so low to go best to worst.
We'll save the worst for last. So
actually, on the Fox Sports power rankings, Ohio State is number two.
Okay, so ESPN said the Oregon Ducks had the number two offseason. Doesn't mean number two team. Number three offseason was USC Trojans. Where do they fall in the power rankings?
Interesting. USC is down at number five.
Okay. All right.
Sports.
Still within the ballpark.
Yep.
Again, for power rankings, what I'm giving is the power rankings for their offseason. And I'm not going to list any players because I'm not going to pretend I know them. Ohio State's interesting at four, but it's also because they lost an ungodly amount of people to the pros.
NFL talent.
Yes.
But it's Ohio State. I feel like you have to assume that they're going to reload and replenish. I'm never going to assume that Ohio State doesn't have NFL talent until it becomes blatantly obvious.
All right, where was Ohio State on this
number
list?
Number two.
Number two. Penn State number five on this list as far as offseasons.
Penn State's all the way down at number seven in Fox Sports.
Okay. They added a couple quarterbacks I do see. So
I mean, it's just the Iowa State Nittany Lions
this year. That's a very good point.
Penn State
that's a very good point.
With Matt Campbell.
And maybe that's why they're slipping a little bit. But honestly, I think Matt Campbell might be a better coach.
Oh, that's an interesting take.
Yeah,
James Franklin?
I didn't hate James Franklin, but I think Campbell could be a sneaky, excellent coach.
I think he's a very good coach. But what big games has Matt Campbell won? I mean, James Franklin's whole thing, he'd win everything up until the biggest ones.
Yep.
Has Matt Campbell won anything of significance?
That's where you got to account for the Iowa State recruiting and money. Like, that's the leap of faith you're taking of, like, what is he expected to win when he's at a school that spends less. Michigan is number 6 on this list as far as off seasons.
Michigan number 4 on the overall power rankings, which is interesting given that, again, it's another Big 12 coach coming to the Big 10, Kyle Whittingham.
Yeah.
Done a lot of great things at Utah, but I feel like it could be one of those Kalen DeBoer type situations where you're taking a big step up in expectations and demands from the fan base, and we'll see if it's too much.
Also, like, might want to factor in their offseason was pretty terrible.
It was
honestly
awful.
Almost the worst way possible to lose a coach, and then they were turned down by other coaches because it's such a mess there. So honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Michigan has a rough go here because there's a lot, but maybe Whittingham is one of those guys that's kind of steady Eddie.
He can stabilize everything. And then
Interesting note here, Coy Detmer is their quarterbacks coach. He is the brother of Ty Detmer, former Packers QB.
Oh.
Ty Detmer, I believe, won a Heisman at BYU. Coy Detmer was the quarterback, I'm pretty sure, that came here as the quarterback for Colorado with Westbrook and beat the Badgers. I was at that game. It would have been at Camp Randall in the probably
was that the 95? Was that the 95 game where Wisconsin wore the cool alternate uniforms and then they got pasted and they burned them all at the stake?
Yep. I was at that one. And
okay,
then,
fun.
Yes, the Iowa Hawkeyes are 7th in the offseason. Where are they in the Fox Power Rankings?
They are number 9 in the offseason power rankings.
They're all within that little window there.
Yeah,
what about
2 or 3?
Nebraska, 8.
Whoa, Nebraska is all the way down at 12.
Okay, so they must have had a good offseason. Again, we're doing ESPN is giving the offseason rankings. You're giving Fox Sports preseason ratings.
Yeah. I'm not sold on Nebraska. I'm never sold on Nebraska, but we haven't seen that typical Matt Rhule, like, massive jump that he's used to seeing at his other collegiate stops. Yeah. So if it doesn't happen, I thought it was last year. If it didn't happen last year, it's not going to happen. I really am not sold on heading into this year without Raiola.
I agree. Minnesota number 9 on this list.
Yeah, they're number 10 on this list. That's absurd.
Okay. All right. Illinois, 10.
Okay. Illinois is number 8.
Well, again, this is the offseason, and those who really follow college football said that for Illinois, this was kind of like people around them started spending money and they didn't have that advantage. And Brett does a good job of doing it, but they just didn't have some of the schools waking up. Like Wisconsin waking up a little bit affects Illinois' offseason, but Wisconsin's still below Illinois.
I mean, Wisconsin may be below them right now, but on the field last year, Badgers pasted them.
That is true.
So I don't care. I don't care where Illinois falls.
UCLA, number 11 in the offseason rankings.
Okay, number 11 on Fox Sports as well.
Number 12 offseason was the Washington Huskies.
Washington is all the way up at number 6 the power rankings. Very high on DeMond Williams Jr., who the Badgers also really had no trouble shutting down last season.
I don't love to see this. Northwestern Wildcats at 13 in the offseason in front of the Badgers.
Yeah, I don't understand that. They're number 15, according to Fox Sports, right behind the Badgers.
All right, well, here we are. The Badgers, number 14 in offseason rankings, and they were 14 in the Fox Sports after spring practice rankings here. Key additions, Colton Joseph, Abu Sama, and Marvin Burks Jr. We agree with all those are the biggest key additions?
I'd agree. I think the secondary outside of Marvin Burks Jr., who's very good, is being overlooked. You could throw Javon Robinson in there. Austin Kawecki at center. Badgers' offensive line was
it Oklahoma State kid?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I understand he's coming from one of the worst Power Four teams
but
in history.
But still a Power Four program. But yes.
Still, that stabilizes the center position, and that is going to be extremely, extremely important for the Badgers this year. But I get there going with skill guys. I don't totally fault those three.
Key departures, Vinny Anthony, Mason Rieger, and Joe Brunner.
Yes, I think that is very accurate.
Top incoming recruits, Jack Sievers, Keyshawn Tabuteau, and Brady, Beckenhouse.
Beckenhouse. If you're going to look for a weakness this year for the Badgers offseason and where they're at right now, it was their class of 2026. They had a very weak recruiting class this season. I think it ranked 65th in the country.
It was ranked top 20 at one point.
It was.
Before they started losing every football game.
Yes. However, I think their emphasis this year was they wanted to go with a really heavy transfer portal class, which
true.
Didn't rank the highest either because they didn't have many four-star portal guys, whatever that means these days.
It was quantity over quality this offseason.
Yeah, which they needed, to all right. be frank.
Real quick, biggest coaching move. According to ESPN, they rated Minnesota for special teams coordinator Bob Ligaseski and running backs coach Jaden Everett.
Yep, I like Jaden Everett.
Yes, and they did lose. They added Ari Confessor.
Yeah,
and then also they added Eric Mateos.
Yeah,
those are all additions there for the Badgers. What went wrong? Wisconsin's robust roster turnover every year hasn't helped the program that for a decade built success on continuity and player development. The Badgers took some expected portal hits, including Brunner, a two-year starter at left guard for Indiana, as well as safety Preston Zachman, Indiana, running back Dylan Jones, LSU, and then wide receiver Tretch Kekahuna to North Carolina, and veteran center Jake Renfro to Illinois. Wisconsin took more than 30 transfers, but its high school recruiting class ranked 65th as the team lost four-star commit Amari Latimer.
Yeah, right at the end.
Yep. Although Fickell retained his offensive defensive coordinators, they continued staff turnover and could contribute to uneven results on the field this year. The abrupt departure of athletic director Chris McIntosh, who boldly hired Fickell in 2022, amplifies the significance of the season. Marcus Sedbury, who served as Wisconsin's GM, has taken over as interim GM. Anything off of that?
I totally understand where all the pundits are coming from. Looking from an outside perspective, Wisconsin looks like a hot mess right now.
Mm-hmm.
But having talked to these coaches, having talked to the players that have now worked under these specifically the incoming coaches, and fun fact, Adi Confessor. It's like John Adius.
Okay.
That R is pronounced like a D. It's the same thing.
Gotcha.
I don't know why that
all
is,
right.
but
thank
Adi
you for letting
Confessor.
Me know, yeah.
Yeah, the wide receivers seem to really like him. He's bringing a pro style in. Eugene Hilton Jr. and Chris Brooks specifically said he's such a detail-oriented guy. Similar thing with the running backs. Jaden Everett seems like a very good coach, good head on his shoulders, knows what he's doing. So while I understand there's a lot of turnover, I feel that the Badgers are still criminally underrated. It feels like everyone inside Camp Randall Stadium, inside Kellner Hall, is unified. They feel like they have the right people in the building and are oriented towards the same goal, which is winning football games. So I would be shocked if the Badgers finished anywhere below 8th.
All right, and then the last little bit here. What went right? Joseph might finally be the quarterback to jumpstart the Fickell era. List off his, 3,700 total yards last year, 34 total touchdowns last year. The Badgers also boosted their backfield with Sama, rushing for 1,933 yards in three seasons at Iowa State. Then they added to their secondary with Burks from Missouri, as you said, Javon Robinson from Arizona State, interior lineman, as you talked about, from Oklahoma State, and then defensive tackle junior
Poyser.
Yep. Wisconsin addressed the quarterback of the future as Ryan Hopkins gets a shot in here as well. So good things for the Badgers as well. Prime, you're not on the show often. You think 14 is fair for their offseason and going into the regular season rankings for the Badgers?
I think it's brutally fair and honest. I'll be honest. That is where Wisconsin is right now. Riley, you said they aren't a hot mess internally, but there's really no reason to say they aren't looking from the outside in. And honestly, when I look at all the other teams in the conference, like, I think Wisconsin being in like that bottom third, the bottom six, that is exactly where they belong right now. I think you said you couldn't see them finishing lower than 8th this year.
Yep.
I couldn't see them finishing higher than 7th or 6th, to be honest. Like, I don't see them jumping ahead of the Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, USC, Oregon, or Indiana group. Like, that's why I clearly see the Big Ten, is there are three pretty clear tiers, and Wisconsin's fallen down to that bottom third tier. They have to fight to get back to the second tier, which is where, like, they traditionally belonged.
But, yeah, and I think you're correct. Objectively, if you look at what Wisconsin put on the field last year, they were a 4-8 team. They were not good. They had to make significant changes this year. They had to bring in 30-plus players in the transfer portal. That's fair for offseason rankings. That's fair for where they stand right now. But I think 8-9 wins is very much on the table for Wisconsin this season. That's very much in play. And would Badgers fans be disappointed if they finished 8th in the conference but were 9-4 or were 8-5? Like, I don't think Badgers fans would be too frustrated with that at the moment. I mean, 8-5 with this schedule, that's pushing it for me. I have high expectations for this team this year. But 9-4, like, that is very clearly trending in the right direction, and that would put you in that 7-8-9 rankings in the conference.
All right, let's talk a little AD. And the thing that I notice...
Hold on, I gotta give us our little cool sounder.
Don't worry, it's somewhere on the hotkey page, bottom right corner.
Oh, there we are. It's been a while, Jim.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
It's like driving a new car. Yeah, I'll be honest. Yeah. This is not the same car I was driving.
Yeah, no, I gotcha. So the names that I hear, one thing I do want to say, when I talk to a lot of people in the Madison business community, a lot of people are very complimentary of Sedbury. So I do want to say that they say he seems to be a great guy with great energy. Kind of, I don't want to say the polar opposite of McIntosh, but someone who would have been the yin maybe to his yang.
Interesting.
And so there's a lot of positive feedback as far as people that know Marcus personally. And I don't know what that's – I'm not saying that Marcus can or can't do the job. The biggest thing I think he has going for him is that he has the stink of McIntosh over him. So outside of Sedbury, where people do want him to get an honest chance, and again, I'm not going to be an expert on this, another name that comes up – to me, from a lot of people, is Sean Eichhorst, who is the Eichhorst, excuse me. He works for Texas now, like a deputy athletic director, but he was the athletic director at Nebraska for a while. For a long while, actually, and oversaw a run with, like, again, not so much in football or basketball, but won 10 national championships in other sports there, obviously a lot with volleyball, a lot with the Olympic sports. So they did have success with him as the athletic director. Lots of fundraising done, lots of facilities built under his tenure. Before that, he was at Miami for 2 seasons. Jim Larrañaga was probably his claim to fame there, hiring him. And obviously, Miami had a heck of a run, an NCAA Sweet 16 run with him, and like that was a very good hire. And then before that, he was the chief operating officer and oversaw the Wisconsin Athletics Department daily operations, as well as men's basketball program under the director of athletics, Hall of Fame football coach, and former Husker, because I'm reading this on the Nebraska site, Barry Alvarez. So, and then before that, he served with Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier in South Carolina. So he's been around a lot of the smartest people you can imagine in football. He is from Lone Rock, Wisconsin. He's been in athletics for a long time. He's had to make the decisions on hiring football and basketball coaches, and he is someone that at least knows enough about the Wisconsin culture, good or bad. And I want to start with this, whether it's Sean Eichhorst or someone else, do you think the AD has to have some sort of tie to the state, whether it's the university or the actual state of Wisconsin?
No, personally, I don't think they need a tie to Wisconsin. I think, like you said, they need to understand how Wisconsin operates. They need to know what works in the state of Wisconsin. And if they don't have a connection to Wisconsin, they have to get to know the state. They have to be willing to do the maybe not as fun jobs of getting out in the state and meeting people and getting people rallied behind you. And if you focus more on the richer donors, that's still important. So I just worry with Sean Eichhorst specifically. Is it too much status quo? I mean, his big hire at Nebraska was Mike Riley, which that didn't really go so well for Nebraska.
It's kind
Nebraska.
Of Luke Fickle-esque.
Exactly.
Yep.
Except even more so, up to this point, very Luke Fickle-esque. I agree. So that was his, like, big swing at Nebraska, and I'm assuming that's what led to his downfall.
Yep.
And so what's to say he comes in? Women's hockey is still a dynasty. Men's hockey continues their success. Women's volleyball is going to be great. But what else changes at point?
Yep.
And I don't think if you're Wisconsin, we can't continue to have status quo at the athletic director position. I want someone who is willing to push the envelope, who's willing to innovate, who's willing to try to get Wisconsin to the forefront of the Big Ten, because it seems to me that Wisconsin has the money, they have the donors, they have the alumni base, where you could be just as elite as a Michigan and Ohio State and Oregon and Indiana. Like, they came out of nowhere, but they have the right people, they have the right donors in place. So I am just a little apprehensive at someone. I get he's worked with a lot of great people. He's having success at Texas right now. Yep. Texas is doing just fine. It just feels a little too samey for me.
That's fair. And I'm not saying he needs to be the guy. It's just a name that I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do have to walk this line of keeping.
So from the people you've heard Sean Eichhorst, throw out the name Sean Eichhorst, yep. Why do they say, is it just because he's from Wisconsin? Like, why do they like him?
Because I think as a whole, you still could look at Nebraska and having the ability mm-hmm. to do it, and then coming from Texas, and like, they don't discount that experience with Texas. Mm-hmm. And then they personally know him, a lot of them, and so then it's more of like, well, they know what type of person he is, and he could be the, I continue to position like this, but the anti-Mac.
Yeah.
Of like someone coming in that's going to be closer to that Barry/Pat hybrid. I don't think it has to be him. I don't think they have to have ties to Wisconsin. I think that's a cherry on top,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think like you should be interviewing everyone. And if they don't have ties to Wisconsin, that should not disqualify anyone. But if it, all things are equal and you're like, well, this person understands what these donors want, what mm-hmm. the how to handle the Board of Regents, how to work with historically chancellors at Wisconsin. Obviously, it's a specific one, but how to handle and navigate all that, it doesn't mean you have to do it and you have to have that person. But if they have that knowledge and they're equal with someone else, then maybe you lean that way.
Okay, that's fair.
That's kind of the way I look at it.
It's if all things are equal,
yes.
Then
it's a cherry on top.
You lean the guy from Lone Rock, which,
right.
You know,
yes.
The only thing I know about Lone Rock is that they have the polar bear on their welcome sign to
okay.
Lone Rock. That's all I know.
Okay, all right. Prime, you got any thoughts on the AD, or at least what you're looking for? It doesn't have to be Eichhorst specifically.
Yeah, I don't know enough about Sean Eichhorst. The biggest claim to fame for him is that he's the one who moved up Bo Pelini and was kind of like the Nebraska version of moving off of Paul Chryst.
Yep.
So that
yeah.
just gives me all the wrong vibes.
Yep,
it makes me
fair.
Think of McIntosh more
yep.
than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Though I don't think moving off Paul Chryst was necessarily the wrong decision at the time. They just
Nor
made
was
the wrong
moving off Pelini.
They just yeah. made the wrong next steps, unfortunately.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I just think they need someone. I like that he's from Texas at the very least. He's been involved in a major power player in the NIL transfer portal world,
mm-hmm.
and like from a true blue blood. I don't know if they need someone from a true blue blood, but I want someone who at least has a lot of experience or at least knows how to get the right people to help put things in place to help the NIL funding and help actual acquisition of players. Like, I think that is where Wisconsin's falling behind the most. I don't know exactly what their scouting department is or, like, grabbing players out of the transfer portal, how much time they have to invest in that or what funds they have to invest. But if they could find somebody who's an athletic director who has experience doing that at a really high level and just show them how it's done, that's what I think they need more than anything. Whether he's from Wisconsin, whether he's from Canada or wherever he's from, like, just be someone who's been in this world.
Yeah, and I think that's why the Texas experience is the most intriguing to me. But still, outside of that, I'd be a little hesitant if they hired.
That is 100% fair. I don't know if any of these are going to be home run
yeah,
hires.
Yeah, true.
All right, let's go to our clip of the week.
Around these parts, there's only time for the best of the Badgers.
We don't know exactly where we are right now.
Why don't you own the Wisconsin football team?
We need to play better significantly.
They're spoiled rotten.
This is the clip of the week on the Jump Around.
Go someplace else. Go boo in a bar.
Very scared me. Yeah. I didn't know boo in the bar was in there still. Okay. All right, guys. Well, there was some unfortunate news for the Badgers yesterday. In-state recruit Donovan Davis, as many in-state recruits have, ended up committing to Iowa State last night. He is a guard from Freedom, a four-star, making it the 17th straight in-state recruit who is labeled a four-star by 24/7. To commit to a team other than the University of Wisconsin. And notably, since it's Iowa State, we know that our favorite Iowa State alum, Tyrese Halliburton, had to chime in with his own, his own quote tweet of the news. Here's what he had to put out there.
But it's interesting. I personally feel like if you live in Wisconsin, you'd rather go to Iowa State than Wisconsin. That's just how the cookie crumbles these days.
So this isn't the first time Tyrese has done that. It's kind of like
jerk. It's
his version of like the oops tweet from Mike Oates, essentially, anytime Iowa State gets a Wisconsin kid. But guys, How do you feel about this, Tom?
Isn't Tyrese...
Tom Oates?
Not Tom. What did I say?
Mike Oates.
Did I say Mike Oates?
And I was like,
Mike Oates.
I was like, who the hell is Mike
Oates?
That's
a great question. Like, Tom Oates, the version of his version of the oops quote tweet.
No, I got you. I thought I was missing something. Okay.
It wasn't Halliburton pissed that the Brewers bailed on him throwing out the first pitch. Like, he just antagonizes the state of Wisconsin. I don't know what.
Well, he became the villain for the Bucks, and I don't think Wisconsin fans have any ill will towards him. But
I do.
Just it's rubbing salt in the wound every time a guy goes to Iowa State.
I love Halliburton only because I can fully acknowledge that if he was on one of my teams, I would absolutely love his entire attitude. And if he ever ended up on the Bucks or something, I guarantee he would be the heel towards everyone else. And so, like, I always hold a place in my heart for those guys who are, you hate them because they're not on your team, guys, but you'd absolutely love them if they were on your team. And Halliburton is one of those guys for me that if he was a Buck, or if he had played for the Badgers, I would love every bit of it. Maybe the Badgers can bring in Jamie Pollard, because most of the good recruits...
He's the head coach,
head coach at
Iowa, right?
He's the AD at Iowa State.
Okay.
Bring him over, because most of the in-state recruits in Wisconsin seem to go to Iowa State.
Yeah, CJ Ulzelberger, whatever his name is.
Milan Momcilovic, who's now in the transfer portal. One of the highest-paid guys left in the transfer portal.
Yep.
Yeah,
see, I
have some connections.
I feel like this has got to be a money issue, right? Like, there's no way
this was happening before NIL, too, though. That's the thing.
Fred Hoiberg pulled a lot of guys.
Halliburton, he was recruited, 2017 maybe or something like that, when I was still in high school. So, yeah, I mean, this is before NIL. This has been a real trend with Iowa State.
But I believe Halliburton and Donovan Davis were the only players from these 17 in-state, top 100, whatever, players to have an active offer from Wisconsin when they decided to choose not to go to Wisconsin.
Okay.
I believe.
So then do you blame Wisconsin more for this, or do you blame, like, Iowa State? Because if Wisconsin is just not even offering these guys.
That's the thing. Then that's a Wisconsin issue. And I gave Luke Fickell a ton of credit for locking down the state for the class of 2027. So you got to get on guard a bit here for not locking down the state and for this consistently being an issue. And I can't say I am familiar enough with the recruiting trail or how this whole world works. I'm trying to learn. I'm starting to learn. But, like, this feels like an issue if you're Greg Gard. Like, how have you not figured this out at this point? Unless it's just a money issue, and then there's not much you can do.
Yeah, so at Iowa State, since the new coach came in 2021, 22-13, 22-11, 29-8, 25-10, and 29-8. So that's a pretty appealing one. When it was under, I think Hoiberg was there before that, it was much more up and down.
Mm-hmm. But see, that's the thing. Like, it's not like Wisconsin, I understand they haven't had the tournament success, but if you look at Greg Gard's resume, he has put guys in the NBA. He has elevated.
Well, so, like, this is where it gets harder. It's been a while, and none of those guys are in the NBA. Iowa State can point
to Tyrese Halliburton. Who else outside of Tyrese Halliburton? I'm not familiar with Iowa State basketball, really, much, other than them beating Wisconsin.
The guys, they're currently in the NBA, but they were kind of an NBA mini factory with Hoiberg, because he was kind of, he would pick up people who had, like, dings on them.
Yeah, they also had Tyrese Hunter was a really good guard from Racine, who I believe went to Iowa State and ended up going to Texas after that. There's especially, like, the southeastern Wisconsin, like the greater Milwaukee area, the 414. They've been kind of pillaging that area, unfortunately. Them and Marquette, obviously, but Marquette, who cares?
And Marquette. See, that's the thing. If you're Marquette, that's even more of an indictment on you, because they're literally in your backyard. Not saying that to excuse Greg Gard. Greg Gard has got to find a way to better recruit the state of Wisconsin. But I don't understand it. Like, I understand these Iowa State guys have Wisconsin ties, Wisconsin connections. I'm sure they can relate. They've had success. But what are you getting at Iowa State that you wouldn't get at Wisconsin outside of maybe more money? I'm lost.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think a lot of it has to do with maybe the style of play. I'm not saying Wisconsin doesn't do the right thing. I'm just saying that they are turning out Iowa State. It's not like they're an NBA factory, but there's been, you know, guys even back like Marcus Fizer and was it Royce White or another guy who played in the league for a while, like a lottery pick. So they had some guys.
Royce O'Neal?
No, it's the guy got run out of league because he had a lot of mental issues.
Oh, okay.
Played for the last of the Timberwolves, but he was picked high. I'll get you the name as we enter the Twitter portal.
It's time for the Badgers Twitter portal.
All right, guys, I'm going to keep it short for the Twitter portal today since we're running a little bit long. But one of the big pieces of news from yesterday, the American Football Coaches Association has officially, or not officially, but they're expected to finally come out and support a 2014 playoff, including the elimination of league title games. That being the most discussed 2014 playoff model would include at-large bids for the college for the top 16 teams in the college football rankings, automatic berths for the group of six, and first-round campus games for seeds 9 through 24. Now, guys, I don't know about you. This feels like a last-ditch attempt to try and keep the Big Ten and the SEC from splitting away from the college football playoff, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can get as many of the teams in as possible.
Yeah, like a last appeal, like
pretty much
appeasement strategy
exactly.
To the powers that be. Yeah, all I know is that it looks like college football is going down the crapper. Like, the way we have grown up with college football and grown to love it, like, that is just gone forever, and it's never going to get better. It's just going to end up being a mini NFL where they license out the brand of the school. And
so I would ask you this, Riley. What would you rather have, this 2014 playoff in the current setting of college football, or just the Super League with like all the teams from the Big Ten and the SEC doing their own thing?
I would honestly, if those are my only two options.
Those might be the only two options.
Probably are. I would still rather have the 2014 playoff because then there's at least the guys that it's fair. You still have maybe a group, two group
Sell
of six
hope.
Teams. In See, there, then if you're the Badgers, just got to be in the top 25, and you're in.
I go the other way, because I think if they break off to their own league, you then can create structure with salary caps and
collective bargaining for the players would
contracts,
actually happen.
Those sorts of things. So
it makes more sense financially.
Right, but the other one's going to be more pure college. It'll be better because it's actually fair for everyone.
Yes.
Before we get to the next one, Royce White. It was actually a star in the state of Minnesota.
Okay.
And then played for Minnesota 2009, 2010. Got arrested like four times in Minnesota. So then he went to Iowa State, played there for a year. Didn't have the greatest run off the court there either, but was a 2012 first-round draft pick, 16th overall to the Rockets, played in the NBA for six seasons. Two-time, though, MBL Canada champion.
MBL?
MBL Canada Most
Major
Valuable
Basketball
Player.
League?
Two-time All-MBL Canada First Team. But in college, he was first-team All-Big 12 and Big 12 All-Rookie his one season at Iowa State, because he like left middle of the year at Minneapolis, like at Minnesota, like his eligibility was up in the air, and then believe it or not, his life actually got more off the rails.
Oh gosh!
Wow!
But he also ran for a few times for Senate seats in Minnesota.
Oh, dang!
Has not.
What an eclectic life.
Has he turned his life around?
I don't know.
We'll get an update maybe for the next show. All right, we'll keep it moving. One more thing for the Twitter portal here, guys. This is something I think, Jim, you sent in the Jump Around group chat last week. The start bench cut trend is obviously very popular in college football, and especially for Wisconsin running backs. There was this one that went a little viral last week. Start bench cut from College Football Zone on Twitter. Monte Ball, Melvin Gordon, Jonathan Taylor. Guys, Riley, I'll start with you. Start, bench, cut, those three.
Rob Havenstein was struggling with this yesterday Ryan asked him.
Well, I switched it slightly.
That interview is coming up in a little bit here.
Yes. I switched it slightly. I gave him James White instead of Jonathan Taylor because he played with all three of those guys.
Okay, I like that. Okay,
give me JT, starting Jonathan Taylor, benching Melvin Gordon, cutting Monte Ball, unfortunately.
Jim?
I'll go with the same because...
Really?
When we had... I mean, I would love to start Melvin, but
I can start
JT. If we want to mix it up, I can start Melvin.
Yeah, I feel like it's those two.
Yes.
You could pick either one.
Yes. Because we talked to a lot of players, a lot of former running backs, including Monte and Melvin and all of them, and a lot of them picked Melvin. Like James White and Monte. Like, not so much of like, you know, cut, start, bench, but more of... who's the best? And Barry even said Melvin, outside of Ron Dayne.
Wow. I mean, he should have won the Heisman.
He should have.
If Mariota doesn't have an insane off-the-wall year, Melvin Gordon runs away.
I will say, if Jonathan Taylor played in a different era of college football, I think I could see him winning some Heismans too.
Yeah, absolutely. Or if he stayed one more season, you never know.
Stayed, maybe. I think a running back winning the Heisman now is kind of out the window, unfortunately, for college football. But I think if Jonathan Taylor had been doing what he did at the time that Melvin Gordon did, I think he would have been right up there for like Heisman finalists.
I like to do this every time we talk about Melvin.
Yeah, I just
like to point this out. So for his career, he averaged just short of 8 yards per carry.
That is it 7.2?
7.8.
7. Okay, so it was the 2014 season. I think it was 7.2.
7.5.
Oh my gosh.
So that's, 2022 is a freshman. 621 yards on 62 carries. You can do the math on that one,
just
yards per carry.
Awesome.
But his last year at Wisconsin, 343 carries, so workhorse, all right? Also had 19 catches for 153 yards and 3 touchdowns. So yards from scrimmage were 2,740 yards from scrimmage and 32 total touchdowns. But on the ground, 2,587 yards, 7.5 yards per carry, 29 touchdowns, 185 yards per game, and 19 touchdowns. Or, I'm sorry, not 19 catches. No, he had more. 29 touchdowns. Then 19 catches for 153 and then 3 touchdowns. The year before that, he ran for 1,600 yards at 7.8 yards per carry.
Averaging almost 200 yards a game is bonkers.
And basically almost averaging like every two carries, you got the team a first down.
Yeah. Is insane. I'll never forget. My favorite memory, I love the Nebraska game. Obviously, the 408 game was awesome.
Yeah, we talked about that with Rob Havenstein, too.
Yes,
that was great.
And I'm frustrated that in the moment I didn't ask Rob about the Auburn game. Because Cameron Artis Payne, or is that the basketball player?
No, it was the running back. Cameron Artis Payne was talking all that smack.
Yeah, he was talking all that smack. Oh, I wish I got to play Northwestern and Purdue. Yeah. Oh, let's see him face an SEC defense.
Sure.
And he got shut down, and Melvin ran for like 200-some yards.
And if my memory serves me correctly, Melvin had one of those Michael Jordan, and I took that personal moments, too. I think he said that afterwards, that there was a lot of talk, and he wanted to prove where the Badgers and the Big Ten stands.
So awesome.
Absolutely. Do we have Rob Havenstein coming up the next year, or we have another Twitter portal?
Okay. We move on from the Twitter portal. Let's have Rob on.
All right. Well, the Memorial Day sale is going on right now at Steinhoffel's, and honestly, it's the perfect time to get your home ready for summer. Save up to 30% store-wide, plus get amazing deals like Beauty Sleep Mattress for just $399. Plus, they're offering Steinhoffel's 18-month 0% financing, so your dream space is well within reach. Head into Steinhoffel's or shop anytime at steinhoffels.com. Don't miss the Memorial Day sale at Steinhoffel's, Wisconsin furniture and mattress leader.
It's Steinhoffel's Mother's Day sale. Save 10% off store-wide. That's 10% off living room, 10% off dining, 10% off bedroom. Plus, take an extra $100 off every $9.99 you spend. And take advantage of Steinhoffel's 18-month 0% financing to make your purchase even more affordable. Steinhoffel's is Wisconsin's furniture and mattress leader, and we're 100% employee-owned. Shop in-store or online at steinhoffels.com.
We are thrilled to be joined by former Badgers and Rams offensive lineman Rob Havenstein. And that is how you pronounce your last name, correct? Havenstein, not Havenstein?
Correct, yes.
Okay, excellent. Glad I got that right. And Rob, if I am not mistaken, you just underwent surgery after your retirement from the NFL on your ankle. How's it feeling? How are you doing these days?
Yeah, no, it's feeling good, feeling better. It was something I needed to get done just for overall health and life and happiness after football. But yeah, got rid of the crutches today, so we're walking around a little bit just in the boot. So that was a big thing, get to use my hands again, which is nice. Mm-hmm. Feeling good, down a couple pounds, and you know, hopefully we stay that way.
Yeah, congratulations on getting off the crutches. That has to feel nice. And you just finished off an 11-year NFL career. We talked about it briefly before we went on air here. You won a Super Bowl. What would you say is the accomplishment you're most proud of from your time in the National Football League?
Man, it's hard not to say the Super Bowl, especially after the 2018 loss to the Patriots. And that was kind of one of those seasons where everything was kind of going magical. And then, you know, you get there and, you know, you end up losing the Super Bowl. And so I lost three Rose Bowls when I was at the University of Wisconsin. And, you know, I've started thinking like, man, am I cursed? You know, is it me? And so it was like, you know, are you ever going to get back to the big dance? And then so when we actually went out and got it, and got it done, it was just, the feeling is just so overwhelming. When you actually accomplish what 32 other teams or 31 other teams are trying to get accomplished. And, it was special, but there was so many special times in there, and it wouldn't happen without the special people around the Rams, people in my life. But in terms of on field accomplishments, I mean, kind of hard not to say the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that feels pretty hard to compete with objectively. Mm-hmm. So you were on those teams that lost three consecutive Rose Bowls, a Super Bowl runner-up, then a Super Bowl champion. You know what it's like to be on really good, cohesive, championship-caliber rosters. What would you say is the biggest similarity between all those teams? What makes a team a championship team?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to just kind of the culture you have in the locker room. I think it's about the guys you have in there, how people actually care about each other on the field, off the field. I mean, the tightest teams that I've been a part of and the most fun I've been a part of is teams that really care for each other. And that goes from your specific room, me being in the offensive line room, and that expands to the offense, and that honestly expands to everyone. You know, you have having fun and out there practicing with the defensive guys all the time, and it's just a true team. And that's what kind of makes those seasons special, is because you want to do well. Obviously, you're out there competing for yourself, but then when it's something bigger than you and you want to do well because you don't want to let the guy next to you down, that's when it really starts kind of getting special, and you can start, you know, doing some really special things on the field.
And is there a moment on those teams, like, for, I don't know if there's a moment that sticks out from any of those Rose Bowl teams or the Super Bowl champion team, but is there a moment that happens during those seasons where you're like, oh, yep, like, this team's special. This team's got that, the it, whatever it is that makes it.
Yeah, you usually kind of figure that out after the season. I've been a big believer in kind of being where your feet are, and so it's – When things are going really well and people are talking great about you, you know, you got to tune that stuff out. So it's, you know, because, you know, they're going to love on you when it's great and they're going to hate on you when it's bad. So I've seen both sides of that. And so it's just being where your feet are, trying to do the best you can each and every week. And then, you know, everyone kind of knows down in their heart that, like, man, hey, we do have a good team. Like, we can do something special here. And it's talked about, but it's, in order to get to where we need to go, we need to handle what we need to do today. And so I think, and then looking back on it a couple of years removed, you know, 5-10 years removed, then you can really start getting into the nitty gritty of really what makes the team special, what made it so special for everyone, and, you know, all the fun stories that come with that.
Okay, interesting. And going back to the camaraderie and the playing for each other, we actually talked to Nizer Forkurin, who was just picked up by the Rams, funny enough, as an undrafted mm-hmm. free agent, former Wisconsin safety. And he said that last year, even though the team went 4-8, it was a very disappointing season by all accounts for Wisconsin, that the team was very bonded. They were very together, and that was how they were able to spring some of those big upsets at the end of the season. How do you go from a team that's struggling and not able to win football games to a team that's able to pull off big upsets, get big wins, and sort of maintain camaraderie even when everything isn't going perfect?
Yeah, you know, honestly, that's great to hear. You know, because if you can have a tight team in those tough times, it's just going to set you up for success later if you, you know, still have the right guys in the building. You know, I think just going back to work and doing your 1/11th you know, it's talked about all over football, but it's, I know it's really true. It's just honestly getting better personally so you can go do your job, and then hopefully everyone else is falling in line, and then all of a sudden that starts building to something special. You know, when we were my first couple years with the Rams, I was 1 year in St. Louis, and then the St. Louis Rams became the LA Rams, still under Jeff Fisher, and we had a real tough season in 2016. And so then, you know, Sean McVay comes in, and so a lot of the same guys were still kind of there, and it was building new relationships from that. But then once you kind of had that and then everything started going a little bit better and everything, like there was an uptick of urgency, it was kind of hard not to get better. Obviously we brought some different pieces in that, you know, that went well, but it was everyone improving individually. And then that just kind of stacks and stacks and stacks day after day. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're winning games. You know, we won the division that year, which to me felt like the Super Bowl because we weren't even a real thought of even trying to do that or even going to the playoffs. And then once you got there, it was, all right, we made the playoffs. Now let's go win more. You know, it's like that wasn't the goal. The goal was to win in the playoffs.
Okay, so it sounds like you hear the cliche all the time, winning is contagious, but it sounds like there's a lot of truth to that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, there are winning cultures and there are losing cultures, especially here in the NFL. You know, I was just at a dinner yesterday with some of my old coaches and guys that I played with, and you know, we were, you know, knocking back a couple margaritas on May 5th, and naturally just sharing stories. And you know, he was kind of going and saying that's like 2/3 of the NFL really doesn't have a chance to be good because they can't kind of get out of their own way. And I think that just comes back to the teams that have consistently won will continue to do that because they're set up the right way. They may have a down year, like maybe just something doesn't work out, but they're not the ones stopping themselves. You know what I mean?
So I guess bringing that back to the Badgers and last year's team, difficult season, but they got a couple of big wins at the end of the year. So it seems to me as an outside observer, diehard fan, I went to spring practices, that it feels like last year those wins are something you can build upon and create a winning culture. But how do you take the momentum you got from those couple of wins, and then, I mean, they still lost the axe to end the season. How do you take those positives and work it into and build off it into a successful next season when the results still just haven't been there the past few seasons?
Sure. You know, honestly, that's a pretty tough question, especially for me, because my college experience was so different than the landscape of college football right now. Yeah. You know, back in the day, it's, you know, you still had your class and, you know, there maybe you get a new guy or two or somebody leaves or somebody has to medically retire or something like that. And that's kind of really the only way you got new guys in the building. I feel like the way, you know, college is nowadays, it's probably a lot more challenging to take what a team did last year just because the team changes so much. But the guys who are still there, they still remember that feeling. And that's when you really rely on your leaders. And, you know, normally your leaders of the team I don't think it's going to change anytime soon, is guys who have been there, guys who really believe in the system, believe in Wisconsin. They're the guys that can bring, you know, put someone under their arms and bring them with them and then go ahead and start building off that. So I think you're going to rely on your leaders a lot.
Okay. And I know you've been obviously a little busy over the past 11 seasons playing in the National Football League and winning Super Bowls and whatnot, but how much have you been able to watch Wisconsin since you made it to the NFL and especially in the Luke Fickell era the past four seasons?
Yeah, you know, I try to watch as many games as I can. It just kind of stinks. You know, half my games are away games, so we were always traveling. So it's, you know, you're watching up until the plane leaves, and whether or not the plane has Wi-Fi is, you know, a crapshoot in that. But I try to watch as much as I can. You know, there's fun little rivalries going on, and you know, especially with the Big Ten expanding, decent amount of USC guys around, a couple of UCLA guys. So you know, you might have a little friendly wager on a couple games, and there's Iowa guys floating up all over the place, so you get to have a little bit of that going on. And so I watch as much as I can. It's hard to keep up with while also doing my job for the last 11 seasons.
Yeah, I can imagine. I guess to sidetrack there slightly, Have you had, what's been the best side wager you have made with a USC player, a former Iowa player? Like, is that something you did pretty frequently? And if so, is there any one of those side bets that stick out to you?
Yeah, there was nothing too crazy. It was probably probably just wearing the t-shirts around, to be honest with you. Because, you know, we had a guy, Austin Blythe, played for played for Iowa. And so, you know, to have him in Badger red, and I made sure I got the reddish shirt I had. Plus, I made sure it was like a real 3X, and he's not a 3X. And so it's just draped over him and just a big W on the front. So that was probably more of the fun stuff. But it was all pretty harmless and just, you know, put a little bit of fun on it.
Yeah, it sounds like a good time, especially when the Badgers are on the right side of the victory. Now, I guess, sticking with this year's team and the new offensive line coach, Eric Mateos, he spoke with us a couple of weeks ago, and him and lots of the linemen this year, they've really emphasized that they want to reestablish the Wisconsin offensive line culture, and they want to earn it. Like, they know that they aren't just an elite offensive line unit because they have a motion W on their helmet, because you played for the Badgers, because Joe Thomas, Mark Tauscher played for the Badgers. They want to earn it. What does Wisconsin offensive line culture mean to you?
Man, it's blue collar. It's tough. You know, it may look ugly for the first 2.5 quarters, and then all of a sudden just the pressure of just leaning on guys and doing the right stuff over and over again, and sticking to, you know, what you were taught and your technique. And eventually that kind of opens up the floodgates. Sometimes it happens earlier, but, you know, an elite offensive line unit is, number one, can run the ball. Number two, can pass protect. I mean, that's kind of the only two things that offensive linemen can do. But it's when you can do both of them very well, then, you know, you can kind of do whatever you want on offense. And so being – I mean, I came up in such a great time at Wisconsin. You know, I had, you know, Gabe Karimia just won the Outland Trophy. You know, John Moffitt was a, you know, stud. Travis Frederick was a young guy coming up. And so I got to learn everything I know from those guys, and like what it means to wear that motion W on your helmet. And so trying to reestablish that, I don't think it's going to be tough, because it's all just in the hard work. I mean, practices that we had were grinders. I mean, they were hard. But you learned how to do hard things. You learned how to be an offensive lineman, especially when you're tired. I mean, but by the time we hit team in drill, in practice, it was like, oh, thank God, practice is done, because we're done. We're done with individual, because we're hitting sleds and getting under the chutes and doing power fits and all sorts of stuff, where it's like it's ingrained into your head to do the right footwork, because you basically did it unconscious for the last 2.5 hours. And, you know, maybe you can breathe, maybe you can't. You're still expected to take correct footwork. And so that's the type of football I grew up in. And so it's refreshing to hear that they want to go earn that. Because like you said, it's, you know, just because you have the motion W on your helmet doesn't make you an elite offensive line unit. It's all about the work that's put in and the sweat equity that you build through spring ball, through training camp, and then into the season.
Yeah, and another thing that Coach Mateos has really been harking on is the thing he looks for in an offensive lineman is a passion for physicality. He believes that's one of the most important traits of an O-lineman. Do you agree with that? I see you're shaking or nodding your head. Yes, do you agree with that? And how do you define the passion for physicality?
Yeah, no, it's a great quote. You know, obviously our job is to put hands on people and to move people, or stop someone from getting to where they want to go. So physicality is in the nature of offensive line. Now it's got to be in you somewhere. It might take a coach to bring it out of you. Or, you know, you might just get sick of getting your butt kicked. And you're like, all right, screw it. I'm going to turn this thing up a little bit. So there's many different paths to, give me the exact quote again.
Yeah,
passion for physicality.
Passion for physicality. Yep, you got it.
Passion for physicality, yep. So that's something that has to be in you, but it can be expressed by a coach. And so having a coach that's Putting that in the forefront, I think it's just going to go great for, you know, all those guys out there. And then as you get older and as you mature and get stronger and you realize that you can do more things physically, then it starts expressing itself on the field. And then, you know, that's where you can honestly start having a lot of fun as an offensive line, getting guys on the ground, having great combinations where you take, you know, the three technique into the linebacker. It's like the little stuff like that, that maybe the lay fan doesn't know, but you come back and you give your right guard a fist bump because you know you just killed that guy. You know, that's the fun of offensive line.
You bring up, that leads perfectly into my next question, the fun of being an offensive lineman. You bring up the average fan, like, I'm just starting to try and really learn the game of football this year as a fan and as someone who gets to do this for a job. I've been trying to watch the offensive line, and like, I can tell when it's a really obvious pancake situation, like, oh, he crushed that guy. But what's something about playing offensive line that an average fan such as myself or those just watching on TV wouldn't know? Like, what's it like playing the position?
It's a lot of detail. You know, people just think it's, you know, get to your guy, head down, smash him, and just throw him into the ground. It was like, yeah, that might work in high school, you know, where you're just bigger and stronger than people. And, you know, some guys can do that in college, but usually that doesn't show up till they're a little bit older. I mean, playing offensive line is all about the details of what you're trying to do on that block and how it relates to your system. And every play, you have an aiming point for your hands, you have an aiming point for your head, and you need to hit those almost 100% of the time. Obviously, things happen. Guys are able to move. You know, they have a say in it too. But the start of how you do everything is will determine whether you're going to be successful in the block most times. And so it's the footwork guys take. It's where their hands go. Are they scared to have the right hand placement in pass protection because it, you know, it might get knocked down? And so they go both hands outside. It's like, everything is so minuscule playing offensive line, and then you have to do all that just to try and have a good start to the play, and then you have to have the passion for physicality to then go ahead and move that guy with correct technique, correct details of your aiming points, everything like that. So there's a lot more that goes into playing offensive line than what some people think about, and it's the I mean, it's got to be the only position that you are playing with your back to the ball 100% of the time. So you don't know where the rest of the play is going. You have an idea where it should go, but then it's up to you to make sure it goes where it's supposed to go. And then in pass protection, you have an idea of where that guy's standing, but you don't really know where he is. And so you need to be as perfect as possible on 60 to 70 plus snaps a game, so nobody even knows you were out there playing.
Man.
And that's the joy of doing it, because the guys who know, the guys in your room, the guys on your team, when you go out and an offensive line has a good game, there's a lot of respect for that, for the guys who know, because they see the work, they see the details, they see the consistency for, like I said, 60, 70 plus snaps, and then, you know, someone else is getting MVP. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. I mean, we did get to see in the Rose Bowl an Indiana offensive lineman. What, that was cool. That had to be fun to see.
That was very cool.
We are joined by Rob Havenstein, former Badgers and Rams offensive lineman. Really appreciate the time. Our producer, Ryan Wollersheim, behind the glass, he's got a couple questions for you as well.
Hey, nice to talk to you, Rob. I got to say, producer doesn't usually ask questions, but I am a little starstruck today, personally. One of my first memories as a sports fan was watching the Wisconsin Badgers and watching those Rose Bowl teams 2011 through 2014. Those were like core vivid memories for me. And one of the ones that I remember specifically standing out was every time I watched a game, they would always show the graphic, Wisconsin's offensive line versus the Packers offensive line, like the size disparity. Like, I'm pretty sure every Badgers O-line was like 330 plus. The Packers were kind of a lighter unit, like 310. Was that like the only time in your career as a football player where you had to actually like push out the outside noise, like as an offensive line, like the amount of admiration you guys were getting?
No, because like I said, when it's when it's good and you're getting your flowers, you don't want to hear it anyways. When it's bad and you're getting hated on, you don't want to hear it anyways. So it's a skill that you had to learn. You know, the guys who, you know, want to take in the praise, they have a hard time dealing with the negativity. And so my suggestion would be, man, does it really matter for what you're trying to do, what somebody else is saying about you, whether it's good or bad? You know, it's obviously better to have more good than bad, but, you know, learn to block it out. Like I was saying earlier, like the guys in the building know. And so if there's flowers to be given, it's because you've been doing a great job, whether you succeeded on that play or not, but like it's your process that, you know, the regular people can't see. So it's learning to block out the good just as well as learning to block out the bad.
Okay. Okay. Well, then the one other question I had for you is that you were a full-time starter during the 2014 season when Melvin Gordon had his Heisman runner-up season. So I got to ask, because you were also on some of the other teams with Monte Ball and James White. So I have to ask you, from like your first person opinion, start, bench, cut, Monte Ball, Melvin Gordon, James White. What are you doing?
Oh, man, you just had to make that tough, huh?
I mean, they're the ones who made it tough, honestly.
Start, bench, cut. Gosh.
That's tough.
I don't know. Because you talk about Monte's scope of work, you know, the all-time touchdown leader. I was there. I was blocking on that play. I had a massive hold that didn't get called, which is great. And that didn't get brought back. So I'm very, very proud about that one. James was my class. He's been a stud, you know, what, two-time Super Bowl winner, I believe, or is it more than that?
At least two. Yeah.
Should have been MVP.
At least
that
two.
One
yeah.
Season.
Yeah, that's true too. And then Melvin, he's, you know, a racehorse, you know, he's a stud. Man, that's tough. All right. There we go.
All right. Instead, I'll ask one different question then. Just what is your favorite memory from that 2014 season blocking for Melvin as he got to the Heisman runner-up campaign?
Oh, thank you for not making me answer that.
Yeah, you're good. I'll give you an out.
You did a good job of dancing around you did. And complimenting
everyone. I was dancing. I was like, wait, I can't pick. James is my guy. Monet's my guy. Melvin's my guy. I mean, gosh, that's hard. But one of my favorite experiences from the 2014 season was obviously that Nebraska game. I mean, it was just such a fun game. And it's like we almost did everything we could to try and not have the game that we did. You know, there's a couple fumbles early. And just one specific thing for me, you know, honestly, selfishly, was, you know, they ended up putting, you know, a really big defensive end out there. It was like 3-something. And so it was really hard to do what we were trying to do because this guy was just kind of so big. He just didn't want to move. And so I went and told TJ Woods, our offensive line coach, I was like, dude, can we go outside of this guy one time? Like, I can hook him real easy. And so he's like, all right, if you want it, you know, I earned enough respect to, you know, go ahead and get that run. And I want to say Melvin takes it like 60 or 70 yards for a touchdown, hurdled a couple guys. And so, like, that was the one that was like, oh, that was actually pretty cool. Like, I saw something, felt something. It's like, you know, we can get outside real easy on these guys. And we went, and then Melvin just did something absolutely special. And then what he, you know, his scope of work for that game was just unbelievable. I mean, he was just in the zone, hitting power backside, which it's never really supposed to go there, and just felt it and then took it in. You know, he got the record and played three quarters. And fumbled a couple times in the game. So, like, if you talk about a perfect game, that could have been 500 plus easy. So that was a special, special thing. Plus, the snow started coming down.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing.
Oh, man. It was just like everything about Wisconsin kind of just came out and came to light right there. And it wasn't freezing cold, but it was, you know, just a nice snow. And I never really played in a true snow game like that. We'd have some flurries and stuff and snow on the ground, but actually play during the snow was awesome.
Yeah, and him setting the record at the end of the third quarter, right in the jump around, that
oh
had
my
to
gosh.
Be awesome.
The kids in middle school were freaking out. I'll tell you, Rob, we were excited. We were excited watching those kids.
Oh, man, I was excited. You're going to say they were excited. I was excited.
And I will say, give credit where credit is due, and James White was a three-time Super Bowl champion. I was able to figure
three
that
time,
out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Three times, yeah. I thought so. I was like, no, two's low. I'm pretty sure it was three. I was going to go four, but, you know, because they beat us in 18, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, that's fair.
So he's the one who cut it in that case, right? That little revenge there? Yeah, there
you go. Okay. We narrowed it down. Start and bench between Melvin Gordon, Monte Ball for Rob Havenstein. Really appreciate your time. Last one before you go. A fun one. I know in another interview you mentioned you're potentially going to be picking up pickleball here soon.
Oh, yeah.
Have you played Tausch in pickleball yet? That's kind of his sport. Have you talked with him about potentially squaring off in pickleball here soon?
You know, I didn't know. I was unfamiliar with his game on the pickleball court.
Okay.
And mine's not there. Obviously, we're still on IR for the pickleball court right now. But I got my 7-year-old; she's getting real into it right now. So I got a partner to start kind of warming back up as this ankle starts getting a little better. And once I feel like my game might be on par with for even bringing up that Tausch has a pickleball game makes me think he's actually pretty dang good. So I gotta start going a little bit.
Yeah, I can't confirm. I have not played against Mark Tauscher in pickleball, but he doesn't seem to be, I don't know what the right word is here. Like, he doesn't boast about things he's not good at. Like, he's willing to admit his shortcomings, and he's very confident in his pickleball game. So
confident offensive lineman usually means that he's pretty dang good at it.
Yeah, so something to keep an eye on for sure. Rob Havenstein, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely, thanks for having me.
That was Rob Havenstein. Really appreciated that conversation. It was fun to talk to him. Hopefully we'll have him on again sometime in the future. But his appearance was on the Yuengling guest hotline. Yuengling, the oldest brewery in America and now officially in Wisconsin. DG Yuengling and Son, Pottsville, PA. Enjoy responsibly. This has been the Jump Around, a Badgers dedicated show on the ESPN Madison and ESPN Milwaukee YouTube channels. God bless everybody. Peace.